love, kindness, human connection. These are some of the things we talk about on the Danny Painter Show. It's a thing. This show is intended for a more mature audience. We might sometimes say bad words. This week on the Danny Painter Show, Dr. Dion Vyish. Renowned South African plastic and reconstructive surgeon, the man behind my and many other well-known faces in South Africa. We talk about bodies, faces, and even downstairses.
Doctor, plastic surgeon, I don't know what the right terminology is, but you'll correct me. Dr. Dion Vyish, to the celebrities. You are the celebrity doctor of South Africa. Hello, welcome to the Zoom.
Hello. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's great to be here. Really good to be here.
What do we refer to you as?
You can Dr. D. Dion is fine, but Dr. D. Plastic surgeon is the I guess it's not the title, but it's the speciality or discipline, plastic surgeon. But yeah, Dr. D or Dr. Dion.
Isn't plastic surgeon like derogatory though? Because it's not plastic. You're just like using what the person already has and just making it a little bit better. You're tweaking, right?
Yes. Yeah. I suppose plastic goes way back to the initial Greek meaning of the word, which means to use and to make of, but not necessarily plastic like we know plastic, Tupperware plastic, and all of those. But yes. Plastic surgeon, I suppose, is the common way to refer to us plastic and reconstructive surgeons, and is then the full title or the discipline. But cosmetic surgeon, if you're doing cosmetic only, but plastic surgeon, I think, is commonly acceptable.
As long as I'm not being offensive or triggering anyone. Okay, so Dr. Dion has a great story, and I've spoken to him on my Jacaranda FM radio show, and I wanted to speak to him again because it's a story that I love and I want to share as much as I can. Dr. Dion was going to be an actor before he fell into medicine. Tell us about that. Tell us about that journey and
yes,
what you were doing.
Okay, so let me go back to this. So at school, and actually from primary school already, I did a lot of acting extramurally, and that was a very fun hobby, and I did it all the way through from, like I said, primary school right up to matric, and in standard 9, or grade 11 and 12, then did the Dalro National Acting Competitions, which was a year up in Pretoria, and that was the peak of the drama and the acting at school. I was really, really in that time wanting to do film directing, and I was really keen to LA to go and study film directing, I also, at that stage, and from probably family influences as well, was guided to say, well, don't you need something with a little bit more stability? Because in 1995 in South Africa, where was film directing going? I then, rather pursued medicine, which was also equally fascinating. And, I was also strong academically. I had a great interest in not only science, but biology and in particular. And from my second year, then I knew that if I was rolled into medicine thinking that I'll always fall back, I'll do film directing and I can always then fall back onto medicine. Surprised, that kind of medicine, then I don't want to say takes over your life, but not always just a 9-to-5 job. You're on call. You're expected to be available after just regular hours. Yeah. So, And I was doing some drama and some acting during my studies, but then from about fourth year, fifth year, when calls started to become a reality, you know, you couldn't go and then rehearse on a production. I might be dabbling in that whole realm somewhere soon. Stem cells and regenerative medicine is a big passion of mine, and it's something that I always wanted to pursue. A plastic surgeon, we have a lot to do with regeneration of tissues, and limbs and, organs, etc. So I am thinking of on that journey to maybe get to put a lot of or some of that on film and record some of it. And yes. Who knows? Maybe something will come out of it somewhere along the line. I think it's an exciting journey for me, but for others maybe as well, and to share it. So, yeah. So who knows? Maybe it will.
I want this. You have to do this. We need more of you on camera. You are phenomenal on camera, and I love you on camera. I love your voice. I think we need this. And I'm also here for the science stuff too.
So, game on. I think it'll be a good marriage.
Okay, so Dr. Dion, you go to university, right? You study for 100 million years to become a doctor, and even more so to become so specialized in plastic surgery or surgery. Why did you want to do this side of medicine as opposed to, like, you have obviously interest in regenerative medicine, stem cell research, that kind of stuff? Why plastic surgery?
Because also at school, I've always considered myself to be a creative person. I was always sketching and drawing and creating and sculpture and sculpting was a very enjoyable, I don't want to say pastime, but habit and hobby that I had. And from my second year in medicine, I knew that plastic surgery was going to be it if I was going to then not fall back on medicine like I initially thought, because it's such a challenging part. You get to respect the science and then create or restore an organ or a body part or areas or tissues to not only a functional part but also something which looks cosmetically as beautiful or pretty or normal as possible. So respect the science, but you also get to puzzle things out and create, and that is such a rewarding challenge. So that was probably why plastic surgery became the speciality or discipline that I wanted to pursue from an early stage on already.
Do you look at all of us and like see how you could make us better when you're looking at us?
No, I often get that asked that question, but when people ask me my opinion, then I'll go and I'll analyze it and I'll look at the area and I'll make sense of it and analyze and guide then the person as to, I think. To go through life doing that constantly will just be work all the time and also not, what it's about.
How did you, so obviously like a lot of people know you, especially within the circles that I live in and work in. And I go to Dr. Dion, he helped fix my forehead. Because I met through a mutual friend of ours, but you've become quite prolific within the celebrity culture. How did you become that doctor?
It's an interesting question. I think maybe because of also some not connections sounds so bad, but from history, from where growing up also in the acting community, and that there were a lot of maintained relationships, in that regard, and I think that maybe that's why through mutual friends or associations or maybe that's how. Yeah, I think also that in that community, maybe there's also then some people who can, where there's a mutual relatable aspect to it, that it's not seen as, you know, typically a doctor and a specialist who's, you know, someone who
doesn't understand. I still need to move my face, take the wrinkles away, but I still want to move my face.
Yes, exactly. So I get that, you know. So so maybe I think that Danny is where it came from. Yeah.
Well, I love this. And like, so there are so many people that you work with and have worked on and have done work for. I find it difficult that you, when you say you don't take work home, I find that difficult to believe, because I have spoken, you've been on my show at like 9 o'clock at night, and you've come straight from theater in your scrubs to the show and then got home after that for the first time that day. I've also seen you in scrubs at 9 o'clock in the morning. Where do you draw a balance, and how do you not take work home?
Yeah. You know, I think that is something which one needs to respect. And I think also, you know, I know it's a topic that's been discussed over and over, but COVID and level five and being at home for 5 weeks, you know, it's a holiday. I never would have given myself. And you actually, you know, for the first time in a long time, I got to again, realize what being able to switch off is actually a, you know, where it's not like that for most of the time. But here we are, you know, a year, more than a year later, and pretty much back into the same groove as what it was before. And I think what something that it definitely taught me is to take time out and to commit more to having you know, weekends, longer weekends, or longer, or take a week out here and there, not even to, you know, before one could travel, or you were travel, maybe arranging a trip abroad, but that was always also tied in with a conference. You know, it was even there. It was never to, because I wanted to go on holiday. So now I'm definitely going down to Cape Town, and even though I'm more often seeing my family and the friends that I, you know, really grew up with, went to university with, went to school with, etc., and rekindling a very very precious, actually, relationships which were kind of put aside. So I think it's a mental thing. I think that is also what COVID then taught me, is to appreciate that more. But you're right. So, you know, when it's not those times, when I haven't dedicated time to that, time's pretty much open to anything can happen. It is definitely part of, just that's how life is. I don't think I'll ever be able to completely dissociate the two, unless there's another level five, and I'm not wishing that at all.
No.
Unless there's another such a event that ever comes onto us. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question, and this, I think it's this is because of how my brain works. And I was always very interested in medicine. I unfortunately didn't get your brain. I got my brain. So I did the ballet and the piano and the music theory and all that other shit. I couldn't do the maths. But I wanted to be a doctor, and I would have gone into, also, I wanted to do the aesthetic stuff. Right. And it really interested me. But you go from being a normal human being, like everyone else, to getting an education that teaches you how to cut up other normal human beings. And then you're placed in a surgery where you have a scalpel in your hand and you are now cutting up another normal human being. How do you trust that what you are doing is the right thing? I know you have the knowledge, and I know you have the certificate on your wall, and you have the cap and the gown, but like in that moment, surely it's very visceral. Like, am I doing this right?
Yes. Yeah, I think that if you had to ask that question when you're right there, then you know, it's maybe not the best time to ask that. But yes, definitely. You know, definitely experience counts a lot for that. From when you already pick up a scalpel to do a dissection, you know, of a rabbit in your first year of medicine, you already start to feel, to experience cutting another. Okay, well, you know, the rabbit's dead. The rabbit's being.
I would cry more for the rabbit.
So yes, yeah. So you know, but already you gradually get. I don't want to say sensitized. It's not that, but used to it, and every minute of doing that counts, and gradually just builds on a foundation over all the years. I remember the first time I had to remove a mole. You know, you know, the very superficial, it was on someone's arm, and it was post sort of internship, post my community service, the Zuma years, they all call it. And now I was in Paarl Provincial Hospital, and there was this mole which looked a bit suspicious on a patient, and I had to cut that out. And how, you know, almost... Yeah, I'm nervous, excited, but nervous I was as to, you know, am I doing this right? Am I going to do this right? And then a degree of supervision and having support there as well, to be able to not bounce things off, but get that reassurance is also very important to have a mentor. And then seeing so many times over and doing so many times over, it then becomes, you know, one becomes confident in doing that. And it is a gradual introduction, you know, going from a mole on someone's shoulder to removing a part of a person's thigh and under a microscope, sew blood vessels together for it and transferring it to a completely different part of someone's body are things that, you know, doesn't happen. You don't jump into plastic surgery and that's the first thing you do. It is a gradual experience and I think that's why, but certainly planning for procedures is important. And going over the case and, you know, that also gives one, when you're then standing at the operating table, you've kind of gone through that in the week before, over, you know, what you are going to do, how you are going to approach it.
Yeah.
Having an assistant there as well, you know, who's another doctor who also, for instance, with the body contouring, the liposculpture cases that I do, the he's trained in that as well. So having just not even getting advice or an opinion from that person, but knowing that they're there also gives one a sense of security. So it is like not only once you're not doing it on your own, you've got mentors, you've got people that you can, peers that you can call on and get advice from, and then proceed to give the patient ultimately the best of yourself, but also the best for them.
I'm only going to compare this to theatre because you were in the theatre and you are now in the theatre still, in a different theatre. You know that just before curtain where you're standing in the darkness, you're dressed, you're prepped, you're ready, you know your lines, but there's that moment of nervousness before you go in. Do doctors get that as well? You guys get nervous? Yeah,
I hope they do. But definitely, you know, those moments are still there. I must say that with certain procedures, if you're doing it for the... You know, if you've done it a long time ago and you haven't done it recently, or it's a challenging procedure, then you know those kind of butterflies, that feeling is there, but in a good way, in a controlled way. It's never you know, where it feels like it's like you haven't prepared, and that you otherwise you should know what your limitations are, and combine and rather do it with someone else or not do it first go.
Okay, so speaking of limitations and things, every so often there are trends, right, with everything. Just as fashion changes, so does plastic surgery trends. We've seen Brazilian butt lifts. We've seen, I want Kylie Jenner lips. With global pandemics and us not actually going anywhere anymore, how has that changed and what are the trends now and how do they fit in?
So, Definitely a trend that's increased, as I suppose in a lot of industries. It's exactly what we're doing now. It's virtual meetings, it's virtual consultations,
Oh, okay.
and that's never there to replace a physical consultation or examination, but it definitely facilitates the examination and the consultation process leading up to surgery, and then afterwards following up with patients virtually. So that has definitely increased. And in that regard also, and there's studies that have shown actually that there's been an increase in facial cosmetic procedures, surgical and minimal invasive, due to virtual meetings, where I think people have seen are seeing more of themselves on the cameras and in meetings, and they've decided to that there are things now that bother them that they might not have been aware of so many times. And also in terms of just having this to put forward, people are wanting to enhance some features. So that's there. Also on that same front, because people are working more from home and remotely, there's definitely been an increase in the cosmetic procedures because of the recovery, the downtime. People can recover from home, and they can be sitting like we are now, but they could be had some liposuction and be in a bodysuit, and everything from here down is not exposed. So they, not that they're going to be sitting in bandages and that, but they are going to be needing to wear their garments. They shouldn't be driving, so it makes recovery a little bit easier. A lot of liposuction, I think, has increased, but liposuction has been pretty much one of the top two cosmetic procedures worldwide already. But definitely the number of cases have increased. So those are some of the trends. Also, in general, there is a expansion or in newer technologies, minimal invasive, where patients might not need hospitalization. So skin tightening is one of the, the holy grails to be able to achieve without having scars. And if you think about a form of skin tightening, you're thinking about looseness of the skin at the upper arm or around the knees, or, which due to loss of elasticity with advancing age, remember collagen and elasticity decreases from 30 onwards. Those technologies have been thriving and really are on the increase in popularity, and really with good results, not then necessitating the big scars from a facelift or a neck lift or a sometimes even a arm tuck. So those are some of the trends at the moment, which are on the rise and on the increase. And then, like I said, the regenerative work is also, I think it's really the next frontier in medicine, but also in plastic surgery.
Could we fix the collagen thing? If you take collagen, can you fix the collagen thing? Does that work like that? I don't know.
So the cells that produce collagen and their ability to produce collagen start to decrease from 30.
Okay.
So stem cells, if the stem cells are taken, and with liposuction, fat is the highest source for stem cells in the body. Those stem cells can then be used to replace the cells that are busy decreasing in the areas where you want them. So in the deeper layers of the skin, in the layers underneath the skin, in the fatty tissue. So if you had to constantly maintain the levels of those cells, but also boost them a little bit with a procedure like either laser, or you get a treatment called needling. Dermapen is a common form of needling, but you get needling almost on steroids, and that is where radio frequency heat energy is released at the tips of these needles as well, which further boosts the collagen production from these cells. So by replacing the cells and maintaining them, and then also boosting them to produce more collagen, will be, one of the thought processes, almost, and approaches at the moment to prejuvenate. So prejuvenation means that you want to not get to a point where the damage is already done. You want to prevent it from occurring. So that does mean that from ages of 30, where you might not see as much of the effects of aging, that's those stages to maintain it and consider treatments like that, you will probably prevent, or the aim is to prevent the later repercussions then, which only become visible from about late 30s, 40s,
yeah,
as the folds, wrinkling of skin, pigment irregularities, etc. So, you know, it for a lot of people still at the moment, the concept of doing surgical or semi-minimal invasive procedures at a younger age doesn't make sense, because they're like, but I'm not old, I don't need to do it. But it's more focused on preventing the actual visible effects, because then it's, I don't want to say it's too late, but then it's more difficult to, and it's more difficult to achieve a visible difference. Yeah.
So wait, you're gonna ensure that we look young for longer. We're gonna be like hobbling around and not remembering our groceries, but we're gonna look amazing, is what you're saying.
that's one of the aspects of anti-aging, but yeah, also advances in medications, and not only medications, but lifestyle, diet. The hyperbaric oxygen is also a treatment on the periphery, which won't only ensure looking younger, but also in other regards, address the whole anti-aging, holy grail of anti-aging. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I love talking to you, because I think that there's this misconception about plastic surgeons that it's just all about boobs and lips and Botox. And you guys are that, but at a very small scale. I think that we forget that you are also reconstructive surgeons. So if someone has had a mastectomy or has to have a reconstruction or cleft palates, which is something that you've done for quite a long time, pro bono, right?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, it's a pity that some of those have fallen by the wayside. For instance, where I am now, we don't have a unit where cleft palates and those congenital or born with abnormalities are that frequent, or and that there's a multi-team approach, to address those. But certainly from a reconstructive point of view, again, in COVID, it seemed that tensions were high, and that the dogs kind of felt that, because there was a surge in dog bites, and they also, increased, I guess, with children also being at home more, and that interaction being more there. And definitely those reconstructive challenges are still there, and I really enjoy doing them, and that forms a big part of the practice as well. That's not often, as glamorous to some, I suppose, but relevant and definitely still there. And
well, I have to tell you, you were once telling me about dog bites and stitches and stitches and stitches. And I recently found the best TikTok I've ever seen in my life. It's a doctor. I think he's a reconstructive surgeon, and he teaches you on like play skin, how to do the proper stitches for different things. And my mind is blown. I am ready with my sewing kits. No, I would never, but I'm ready just in case. I mean, you never know, but, That's another thing that you don't think of that you guys specialize in, is like just a dog bite can be something that's on your face or wherever for the rest of your life. But if Dr. Dion does it, there's a possibility that you won't even know that it was there.
We do our best, but yeah.
No, you do good. Dr. Dion, before we go, do you have a favorite thing to do?
A favorite thing to do. You know what? Like I do think still, surgery-wise, I must say I really enjoy two things. I really do enjoy the mommy makeovers.
Mm.
It's long surgery. It's big surgery, and it's not just there's definitely a lot of psychology also that needs to go in there, not only for what to expect, but also in the whole recovery process, because it does put anyone in a vulnerable situation, all obviously overseen and controlled, but still nevertheless there's that. So, but it's so rewarding, you know, if you think about some changes which then tend to be permanent, and how by just removing a bit of excess skin and doing some lifting, you you do turn back the clock and also re-erase some of those effects from pregnancy. But you know, that's again, that's my take on it. A lot of people wear their stretch marks with pride because, you know, it also reminds them of what they not went through, but their
journey.
Exactly. So it's for those who want it, obviously, you know, it's not something which is just put on, laid on everyone and needs to be done. And then the other, Danny, I do think is the less invasive ways of rejuvenation that I also enjoy. And yeah, I do enjoy the whole realm of stem cells and the regenerative part. That is a challenge to do without having big scars, without having unnatural results, and this concept of prejuvenation rather than you know, anti-aging at a later stage. It's also really enjoy that challenge and working on that.
Okay, Dr. Dion, if we're considering something, for example, firstly, do I have to have been a mommy to come and have a mommy makeover, or can I just get one anyway?
No, you don't. You can have one. And I had a patient just the other day on that who also said she's been looking for anyone in South Africa who does granny makeovers, and no one does granny makeovers. Where's do I do granny makeovers? And she actually got me onto something, and I searched it on the internet, and that's actually, there is such a thing. So it's basically the even later repercussions, because, you know, you get two types of then mommy makeovers. You get those who have their pregnancies and already at an early stage they want to reverse, and then you have those who first go and see their children through school and university, and then at some stage then later on they're sitting, but then they sit maybe with a bit more of skin looseness and loss of elasticity in areas. But definitely, you know, if you think about a mommy makeover, it's usually addresses changes in the breast and changes in the tummy or abdomen area following pregnancy. So due to that stretch of the breast in preparation for breastfeeding, and due to the stretch of the tummy skin from the uterus and the womb that enlarges, you know, you get those permanent changes of loss of elasticity and loose skin. Yeah. And that's basically why it's termed a mommy makeover. But that can come with great weight fluctuations as well. Yeah. I had a patient who, you know, she made it her goal in this whole COVID period to lose 60 kilograms. And she was actually, and she hadn't been pregnant before, but with just that amount of weight loss, and this was done without bariatric surgery, so all done exercise and diet, she was sitting with a lot of loose skin and basically exactly what one would do with a mommy makeover, just a little bit more extensive in her case, was done, you know, without her having actually been a mom before. So yes, it's called a mommy makeover, but it basically would still be addressing body contouring concerns in the breasts and usually the trunk, tummy area from either weight fluctuation or pregnancy.
I also wanted to ask you something, and you can tell me if I'm overstepping my boundaries here, but I did see something on the internet advertised the other day about extending a certain appendage on men and refining another one on women. Would this be in the realm of plastic surgery, or would you have to go to someone else for this?
No, it's a bit of a mixed field. So a lot of some cosmetic gynecologists, and, you know, also now offer vaginoplasties, labiaplasties, and the same, you know, maybe in the field of urologists or aesthetic physicians with some penile enhancements. I don't know if you've heard about the P shot and the O shot, but that's where the blood is taken and the growth factors are concentrated in the serum of the blood and then re-injected in a male around the shaft of the penis to almost improve the blood supply, because that's what growth factors then the thought process behind is that what they should do, put blood supply to the spongy tissue of the penis, which facilitates the erectile function, and in a female, in injection of the growth factors to improve on the blood supply at the G spot to improve on sexual pleasure. So that can be done. Because we also work with PRP, that's what it's called, this growth factor concentration that we use. We use it for facial indications maybe or wound healing. So we already have experience with working with it, but then it can be applied in some genital areas for that kind of enhancement. Fat injections into the penis is also an option to improve on or to increase the size of the phallus. I've seen some results. I'm not, to be honest, I'm not too wowed by it just yet. Maybe it needs to fall into someone's expertise who's really passionate about it and delivers good results. But to have a penis which is just enlarged in its girth, but not in all of its aspects in terms of its length and its overall performance, to me, I think that there's maybe still some work to be done, but some plastic surgeons definitely are interested and opt more for that and make it their almost little bit of speciality within the speciality. Yes.
Thank you for answering that question. Because I remember a couple of years ago reading something about it is what it is and that's it. And you can do the things, but nothing's going to help. And then I saw this ad and I was like, we've moved on very quickly since then. But, clearly not. Also, it's all about how you drive the boat. So there we go. Dr. Dion, someone considering plastic surgery, maybe a mommy makeover, maybe a boob job, maybe something, liposuction now that they've heard you. What are maybe the key things that we should think of before embarking on this journey?
Well, you want to, especially procedures like that where it's the contouring the body. You want to give consideration to your weight history and where your comfortable weight is, what a safe weight is for surgery. Because definitely it's better for any surgery of body contouring specifically to be done when you're closer or close to your goal weight. Because it must be then, if you are going to be losing some weight in preparation, then it needs to be a sustainable lifestyle and diet. It mustn't be a crash diet. I think that, so that's the one specifically if we are talking about body contouring. The other one in plastic surgery in general is to give good thought to your body image and your self-esteem. And, to also to know that plastic surgery, it's been found, is not a solution and will not improve body dysmorphic disorder, if that is an underlying problem, or body dissatisfaction. Are you someone that's prone to maybe in an unhealthy way throw yourself into exercise or unhealthy eating habits? Because those are also concerns or alarm bells which need you to maybe go and really reevaluate, or maybe even with a therapist get some advice on your and having a healthy, positive body image, because that's important. But plastic surgery is not the solution for that. And, especially nowadays where social media is so prevalent with ways that one needs to look, and, training are even beyond just anti-aging and restoring its enhancements, which aren't even sometimes natural. And, I think that one can very easily fall into a trap where you think you might not be affected, but actually where it has an impact on one's body image. So I think, there are some body image body dissatisfaction questionnaires on the internet. And I think that, maybe to go through some of those before considering surgery to see whether you are, from that point of view, a suitable candidate, and also ways and maybe get some tools to address some of those concerns if they are there. So I think that before surgery, those are some things definitely to also be to consider. And then also just homework with regards to maybe having more than just one consultation with one surgeon, and doing some research beforehand. It's for me very reassuring to know that either a patient's seen another surgeon before and getting some further advice, or that they already know a lot of what is to be done, because it shows that there's a commitment to having a good result, the best result, which is also safe for them, and knowing what they are letting themselves in for. Yeah.
Yeah. And also downtime and recovery and the little things like you're not allowed to smoke or
habits like that. Yes. And those are obviously discussed at the consultation, but beforehand, often patients also phone up and want to know, and we offer that to say, this is basically what you are going to be thinking about in terms of the length of downtime, cost for the procedure, potential risks for complications, because those are there. So definitely into the procedure and what's to follow.
And also the doctor is always going to be there. Plastic surgery is always going to be there. I think it's vastly more important that you go and fix your mental and emotional health before trying to fix it, because it's just like all of us that want to lose weight because we think that the perfect life and happiness and love and money is going to come when we're thinner or that number. Yeah. Doesn't work like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Dr. Dion, this has been great. Thank you for your time. Thank you for talking to me. Okay, where can we follow you? Where can we find you? Where can we catch up with if you're going to do this TV show thing? Give me all the things.
So look, the Instagram page is DW_skin_and_body, DW Skin and Body. The website is drdion.co.za. So those are two routes, and you can either there also sign up to receive a monthly newsletter where I just keep people also in touch with what's out there, what I'm busy with, and that's also probably where some of these other future endeavors will be touched on and explained and awesome. Kept up to date.
Thank you, Dr. Dion.
Thank you so much.
Remember, you can catch the full video on exotv.me, and you can meet us in kind of real life. Thanks to DJ Chuck for the music. You can catch him at www.chucksprosound.co.za. New episodes on Jackpod and Exotv every Monday. Love you.